Jim Duke Radio Network.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy.
What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea. A new world order.
Well, join me. I'm at a severe at the right hand of Satan.
My website is jimdukeperspective.com. Hey, Darren, how's it going?
Hey, Jim, doing very well, thanks.
Now, have you ever heard of the British East India Company?
Never.
Really?
British East India Company.
A lot of people haven't, and I'm kind of surprised because it was one of my first introductions into the British government on how they infiltrated other nations. And it's a very good example of what they did, but also how they do it, and perhaps you will recognize what they're doing here from this. All right?
Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting.
So how did the British Empire gain supremacy over the world? Well, there was a company formed in about 1600. It was after the Spanish Armada, and it was with Queen Elizabeth. It can't be the one that just died, right? Is she 400 years old?
She looked like it.
I know. I mean, it seems like it's the same person because they almost look the same. This is Queen Elizabeth I.
That's a whole other topic there.
I know. Anyway, yes. I know. Yep. What is it, the same person? Are they cloning them? I know. Yep. But right. Queen Elizabeth. She granted a charter, and a lot of times they granted charters. And what they did was, it was almost like granting a provision to do certain explorations. And you got to remember, they even did that, the Mayflower and different charters for the Christians. I think they did that just to get rid of the Christians, you know, the nuisance.
Mm, yep.
But they often granted charters. And they gave this one to certain London merchants to trade in the East. And it grew into a worldwide trade. The company itself had wealth to build a large private army. They had enough wealth to build. They estimate anything from tens of thousands to 200,000 person large private army. Now, this is a company. This isn't a government.
Wow.
But it gave them the advantage to learn methods of control. It superseded other trade developments and became a monopoly of power. There was other trades, but they were starting to monopolize it by just their influence of where they did it, what they imported or exported. The company used bribery to become a pseudo-government or puppet government over India. Picture that. It was a company that kind of planted itself and became the government rule over India.
And keep in mind, India is not a small country in terms of population. They have over 1 billion people, so.
Yeah, because it got out of control of, you know, mm-hmm. poverty and such. But that's, you know, back then it was probably not as vast. But still, it just gave them an open door to, it's like if a company came, well, I mean, some say the United States of America is United States of America Incorporated. It's a business.
They're a corporation.
It's a company. Oh, yeah. But mm-hmm. it's basically a government that has a company status. This is more like a company actually ruled over India as a government. And they imposed forced sales of merchandise, looting through tax collections. That sound familiar?
Wow. I'll bet most people didn't know this right here.
Probably not. I've asked people and they didn't know. This is a research for, you know, a book that I'm compiling, I'm putting this stuff into, because this stuff has to do with the New World Order. Now, the Indian workers, the citizens, were forced to sell their goods to the British at very low prices and were made to buy British products at much higher prices. And the threat of fines and even imprisonment forced their submission. And then a British tax was over them, oppressive, and people died of exhaustion and famine as a result. They couldn't keep up. They were being bullied, basically, oppressed. I hear that it might have been like 400% tax. How do you do that?
Wow.
You know, give us everything. And what are the people going to do if they're bullied by an army that's telling them, give up your money, you must buy our products? And at very high prices.
Can you imagine trying to learn this in high school? You would never see this stuff in your, even college, I'm sure, not even college.
Well, what's ironic is I cross-referenced this. I got it out of a couple books, Treason for, I can't remember the name of it, but also in the Encyclopedia Britannica. It openly mentions some of this.
Wow.
But yet, nobody suspects British as being anything suspicious. And you know, in America, we couldn't do the same thing, right? And then you look at our economy and look at the deliberate plundering and collapsing that's happening over us. And you wonder, immigration coming in, overflooding the population, we can't even control it. They're putting up in schools around our area. They're putting them in college dorms. What the heck?
Incredible.
So at the end of the 17th century, after the American War, remember the American War for Independence, right?
1812, right?
Yeah, so America fought for its independence, and it was succeeding. Independence from Britain, right?
Right.
Political circles associated with the company seized domination control over the British political party affairs, and this history has been neglected to be recorded. So basically, the company used their influence to gain the British political parties to operate. So in other words, they set up a pseudo-political system.
And yeah, this all planned out,
yeah,
obviously.
And what's weird is, you know, like you think about America seceding from Britain, and you say, well, see, we were a free nation. We got away from them. No, we didn't. They let us get away because, you know, basically it was like the nuisance child. Go away. We'll let you have your own way, and then we'll come after you later. And then they just basically retackled them, America. They got their ways. They brought their agents here. So listen what happened. British intelligence, led by William Petty, negotiated a peace treaty with the United States after the War for Independence. Okay, so picture this. We secede from the British rule, right, for our independence, and then we let them negotiate a peace treaty with us? You know what that's going to be, right? But the intent was that the British intelligence was to develop a task of conquest and subversion. They reworked their dominance by subjugating the American colonies to the British control.
Mm.
So the way they would do it is, okay, you want to secede? Go ahead. And then they kind of infiltrated bits of the colonies back to the British control. You don't need the whole country. You just need the colonies. You just need pockets, just like they do today. You don't need everybody to deny God. You don't need everybody to deny a democracy or whatever. All you need is a few people on your side, and you infiltrate them from underneath covertly. The Board of Control for the Affairs of India was led by Henry Dundas, proposed his plan, a master plan to extend the opium trafficking into China using drugs as an instrument of war and looting. So they basically, to take over China, they flooded them with drugs.
Wow.
That sound familiar?
What's going on in here? In the U.S.?
Here we are, approving all different drugs and
pharmaceutical.
Yep.
Yep.
And marijuana and everything else. Dope up the people, they'll never know what hit them.
Cheech and Chong.
Yeah. Then there's British General Cornwallis. He was reassigned by Dundas to govern India. So now you have the company is being run by British generals and such. And the company subdued and controlled Asia as well through its influence of trade. So they used the company to infiltrate by trade, right? And then to further loot India, the British raised high tariffs but kept India open for British goods. And not only was opium used to oppress China, but to pay for British goods sold to India. People in India, as well as Asia and Africa, were used as slaves under harsh conditions to put to hard labor and to keep the labor going. So they were basically, you know, this wasn't just, you know, blacks. You know, you have this woke movement. This was, they were using India, they were using Asia, they were using Africa as their laborers, slave laborers. This is British. British occupation set up by the company ran the government and exploited India for its resources. Now, the British East India Company eventually dissolved, and they nationalized under the British crown. So it's another thing. So the company came in, they used their trade to infiltrate, used British policies, right? British government policies. And then Britain came in and dissolved the company, and it was superseded by the crown. All right, so get the picture of that?
Mm-hmm.
They maintained control by keeping the people from the Western ideas and values, leaving them ignorant about development in the world while exploiting them. So they kept the people enslaved by ignorance. Don't know what's going on. Don't worry about the politics. You just keep on worshiping your cow.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like I'm making fun of them, but I'm not. That's actually what they did. So one of the tactics they used was to emphasize the culture of Indian religious beliefs. And they made Hinduism and Islam a British state-run religion. They actually built Hindu temples for them. Why?
That's to keep them occupied.
Exactly. Keep them happy and appeased by their religion, and keep them separated from knowing what was going on around them.
That sounds like something going on in the U.S. here.
It does, doesn't it?
Netflix and Hollywood and sports. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, we do need entertainment. I mean, even but
obviously,
we're obviously consumed by it.
Right, to be overly consumed, right.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with like doing it just,
not like doing it just to occupy us or keep us, you know, entertained. It's almost like a preoccupation. I mean, people can recite more of the baseball team players than they can any scriptures.
Yep, or the 12 apostles. They'll know what team,
It's more important to know the newest players on the football teams, right?
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Now, there is a philosophy, and I can't pronounce the guy's name, so I didn't write it down, but it's a way to destroy a culture is to first cut its roots. You ever hear that strategy?
Just like the statues coming down here. You know? That's right. Tear down the statues of our history.
America was noted as a Christian culture. Now it makes sense why they have stripped us of our moral code, of the faith. They overrid it with secular humanism, and they infiltrated us without resistance, because they basically, they are challenging our moral code from the Bible and introducing perversions. And incidentally, the same Indian Hinduism used in India was the same tactics used in America. The basis of New Age is Hinduism.
Wow. Yep. It's like a reincarnation and all that stuff.
Exactly. Yep. So New Age is almost like a sophisticated form of Hinduism, the baseline of Hinduism. The universal God and all that, it all came from like Hinduism, but even some of their philosophy.
Gaia.
It's all used in New Age. Now, these same tactics, of course, were concentrated on the United States by John Stuart Mill to gain conquest of America. Now, listen to this. Hinduism propaganda promoted through philosophies masked as Unitarianism, Universalism, by people like Ralph Waldo Emerson, Unitarian.
Mm-hmm. And there's one in Albany here.
Yeah.
Unitarian Church.
Yeah. Exactly. And it advanced the New Age through the Theosophical Society and Lucius Trust. And you know what I think about Lucius Trust, Lucifer mm-hmm. Publishing. No, that's not what I think about them. That's who they admit they are. They were Lucifer Publishing. They changed their name to Lucas Trust. But what I'm saying is, you know what I feel about them. They're mm-hmm. Luciferians.
Absolutely.
So they pushed the agenda into America, grooming ideas for globalism and one worldism through their New Age. And it was said that they were not to divulge theosophy to the public and what they were doing about self-awareness and self-godism until they first infiltrated the churches and cut the culture of our roots. And it was vowed for 100 years they would do this and then reveal themselves. 100 years came about when the New Age culture came. You remember that? We were kids?
Pretty much,
1970s,
yeah.
Remember? 60s mm-hmm. and the 70s?
The hippie movement and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. That all came from this theosophical movement to finally bring New Age. Remember the culture of crystals and meditation,
yes.
Transcendental yep. That was big. And you don't hear so much of it now. Why? Well, because it basically fused with Christianity. Now we have, you know, Christian thinkers, think positive affirmations, think it shall come, pray for it and will it into existence. And, you know, all this stuff is all New Age. And they're saying that it's granted to us by God because he's a creator and we're his image. So we're junior creators. We're gods. And that's taught by like people like Kenneth Copeland. We are small gods. We are gods. We are emulating God ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah, we are to express the image of God through us by his excellence, his righteousness, his perfection. We're supposed to be his voice here, but we are not him. We are separate entities. We are his created. We don't have his essence of divinity. We can do certain things of our jurisdiction, like we're granted to cast out demons. We are granted in cases of when he tells us to lay hands on the sick. And we are granted certain things. We have prophecies. We have certain gifts. But we are not gods, and we do not speak things into existence and believe things happen. And, you know, it's for us, it's everything's what is it? Nothing's impossible. All this stuff. They're catchphrases that are in context, and taken out of context, it sounds like we're allowed to do anything. Nothing is impossible. No, some things are impossible, but in these circumstances, this isn't impossible. It's not impossible to forsake sin. It's not impossible to follow God. It's not impossible to uphold righteousness. That's what it means when it says, oh, these things are possible. That doesn't mean you can do anything you want, but that's what the Christian church has changed it to because they took it on this New Age divinity. This is the divinity of universalism where you get tapped into the mind of the divine and you become the divine. That's this Christian godism that they have.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's prevalent.
Yeah. So, despite the foundation of America, the rooted in biblical learning, and, you know, I talked about the foundations of the founders having their hands in Freemasonry. It wasn't as drastic as it is today, or, you know, was after that, you know, when Illuminism got involved, but still the same. Freemasonry have a certain agenda of salvation, of running the world, but there was a Christian leaning because they could not suppress Christianity. And there was a lot of Christians that founded the new land. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they used Christian principles. So they had to kind of face that and incorporate it. But America was rooted on some biblical leaning, you know, our judicial system and such. But it soon would be taken over by these false philosophies and religions that contaminated the intent and paved the way for this Luciferian society. And that groomed the system for a one-world government of the New World Order. That's what the New World Order is. It's an order with Lucifer on the throne and dismissal or deviating from God. It's an attempt to push God out of the way for Lucifer. But you notice one thing, and I've noticed this, Darren, is that these groups cannot just function as an autonomous culture or nation or government with policies of their own. They need to entangle themselves with diffusing Christianity. Why would that be that they still regard Christianity and Jesus as their enemy, and they have to go through campaigns to cut the roots and deal with it first before they can come in? Why can't they just come in and say, we're going to have this nation, we're going to take it over? Why do they have to address Christianity in every aspect that they are at? You know why? Because obviously, my observation is that Christianity holds a true power. And I'm not saying the belief of Christianity. I'm not saying the statement that of Christianity that most people have in their mind. What I mean is the aspect of Jesus Christ ruling and reigning over the nations spiritually and his body resisting evil and keeping God's power here on earth spiritually, and they cannot entangle that without facing it and defeating it. So they have to push it out of the way. That's why there's resistance. But they're getting better at infiltrating the Christian churches subvertly, getting in there with false philosophies and weakening Christianity, weakening the faith, weakening the adherence to Jesus Christ. They're doing a good job at that. But the fact is they still have to face it because there's still a resistance that keeps them from taking over ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have to deal with us. They would just take over. But all these aspects that I see, the East India House, the taking over of America, was all built on first cutting it at its roots, having to sever the influence of Christ.
And that's what Freemason does, too.
It does, absolutely.
Yeah.
It initiates even the Christians into a brotherhood of a different kind, and I can prove that because a Christian, and I talked to many Christian Freemasons. I've gotten some out of it. And what happened was they didn't even know what they were reciting in the lodges. They were told to do these rituals, and they basically were so overwhelmed that they just recited. And I said, do you know what you recited? And they don't remember. I wrote it. I read it to them because I have their rituals. You can get them from William Morgan, Captain William Morgan, before he was thrown over Niagara River. He exposed these things, and you get them from other places too. And what happens is they tell you that you're basically resurrecting into Hiram Abiff. Your salvation is the salvation of knowledge. You're told that up to now you were in darkness, and now you're in the light under Freemasonry. Wait a minute. What does that mean? That means that when you come to Christ and you come to the light and you come to the enlightenment of Jesus Christ and he opens your heart up and you're not in darkness anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're saying, no, you were still in darkness until you met us. You were in darkness. And you recite that and admit that you were in darkness. Even though you know Christ, you are in complete darkness until they came along. And now you're raised up as a Mason and you see the light through Masonry. That's what you mm-hmm. are vowing to.
Like Illuminati.
Yeah.
You know?
So don't tell me, Freemasons out there who are Christians, that you did not make this vow, because you did. And this is the subtleties that they use to water down the influence of Christianity. And like I said, I'm not using Christianity as the overall blanket general statement, this is a Christian nation. What I mean is Christianity in its fullest form of following after Jesus Christ.
Not just nominally.
Right, exactly. Right. And I have to make that differentiation because, you know, even to say you're a Christian just means you're born in a Christian nation. It doesn't have anything to do with the true faith. It doesn't acknowledge that you're in the true faith necessarily. What you have to do is acknowledge that you believe in Jesus Christ, that you trust him, and that you're saved by his blood and his merit, not by your own, not by your works. And if you're saved by your works, then you're not saved by Christ. If you're saved by illumination, you're not saved by Christ. If you're saved by your vow of Freemasonry and the Brotherhood, and you're saved by the light of Freemasonry and knowledge of Gnosticism, then no, you're not saved by Jesus Christ. You can't vow both. What's the Bible say? You can't serve two masters.
You will hate the one and love the other, or cling to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon.
Right. Now, it doesn't mean you won't be in this world. You're in this world, but it doesn't
mean— But not of the world.
Right. It means not you're not adhering to the world. You know, a lot of Christians will take that and say, well, we can't do the games that the world does. We can't watch TV. We can't. No, you can. You just you watch it with a filter. You watch it where your eyes are. You want to watch what you put in your mind. You want to watch what you submit to. You know, a lot of Christians will say, I do nothing but read the Bible. And I said, do you have a job? And they go, yeah. I said, do you have a handbook that you read from the job? Well, yeah. Well, then you read more than just the Bible, believe me. You can't get away from it. But you put the Bible first and foremost over all your thoughts. And anything that is weighed against you, you weigh it to the scriptures, to God's word, rather than your own philosophies, rather than the world's standards. That's all that means when it says you don't submit to the world. You're not submitting to their finality. It's almost like if I bring you a fact, Darren, and you say, well, let me check this with the source I trust first. We do that with Christianity. We say, okay, you brought that philosophy. Let me weigh it against the source that I trust, the Bible. And that's what it means to have not the world, not submit to the world. You know, you're in the world. I mean, Daniel was in the world. Daniel submitted to the kings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Moses submitted to Pharaoh. It doesn't make you worldly. It just, that was the mode of life. But they did not give themselves to the king. They did not give themselves to the Pharaoh. You know what I mean? When it came push to shove, they honored God rather than the king. So when it comes down to it, no, our finality is that we want to please Christ, not that we want to just live in leisure and die and wonder where we went. No, we want to live in Christ, occupy what we need to occupy, and then carry out our mission. It doesn't mean you have an office, an official ministry office. You don't need that to minister Christ. Minister in your circles. So many Christians won't minister unless they're in a church or they're in an office with a title. No, that's wrong. Be the light where you are. That's how you uphold the kingdom of God. And then your reward will come. And if it comes sooner because those that destroy the body are coming after you, don't worry about it because you don't fear him who can destroy the body. You fear him who can destroy the body and send the whole soul into hellfire. So give your allegiance to the right person. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly.
All right.
It's a biblical principle.
Yeah, I don't have anything left, Darren. I just wanted to bring up this topic here in a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sure you've opened up eyes to a lot of people because I was unaware of this, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't imagine what else is going on that we're unaware of.
Oh, there's so many strategies. I mean, I recognize the immigration getting put in here, overwhelming the system, which they're doing. It's called the Cloward Piven strategy. Overwhelm the system so its welfare is overwhelming. Then you need the government. And now they're talking about raising the debt ceiling to something astronomical. Open pocketbook. Let's just not have any debt ceiling. Let's just keep spending. How are they going to get paid? They don't pay the debt, Darren. They pay the interest on the debt. And we are the collateral for that through our taxes. Mm-hmm. That's what the IRS insures.
Yep.
So therefore, we're paying for this bill. We should be revolting.
Absolutely.
And saying no more. We should actually form our own army or get their army, and we should just basically walk into Washington, D.C., kick them butts out of the seats, and say, you're done.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And go tell the Rothschilds to take a hike. We're not going to accept your debt anymore.
We can't even pay the principal, the premium.
No, we can't pay nothing.
Oh.
No. So, anyway, in a nutshell, my website is jimdukeperspective.com. Check it out and look for us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and we're on all of them. We're on Spotify. We're on Google Play. I can name them all, but we're on them all. So whatever your favorite app is, you can give it a listen there and give it a like too and subscribe to it so you don't miss these episodes. And, you know, we're changing courses a little bit after the hard topics. We're going to talk about some of these little topics that make up the New World Order, and hopefully I can make you aware of some things that have been, you know, in history that is hidden, or so to speak. All right, we'll see you next time, and thanks for listening.
Wait, can I mention one thing about, if people can look out for my YouTube rebuttal to McToon, it should be coming up in a couple of weeks. It'll be attached to your website, correct? Underneath where the pictures are?
I suppose I could put it in there.
If you could. If not, I'll give them the link. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome.
All right, we'll try that. All right, we'll see you next time.